se défraya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So we are reading this morning from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, and I'm not sure where we're reading from. Is it, what where are we reading from?
It's the bottom of the page. It starts off at the mantra of bonds.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So that's now, what is it?
Chapter 1.
Chapter 1, what's the title? So Sorry. It is, okay. Okay, let's see. Acha. And so we're reading from chapter 22 of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, and okay, we'll just carry on. Chapter 22 is titled Swami Invites the Hippies. So we will read and we will make a few comments as we go. So the situation is that Srila Prabhupada has just, the disciples have put on a big rock concert in San Francisco, and many of the prominent musicians and just leaders of the hippie community participated, and they really, everyone really got into it. Everyone really got into it. And many people became attracted to Krishna consciousness. So, let's see, this is now, okay, so this is now describing just the beginning of the concert, the beginning of everything. On the night of the Mantra Rock Dance, while the stage crew set up equipment and tested the sound system, and Ben and Roger organized their light show upstairs, Mukunda and others collected tickets at the door. People lined up all the way down the street and around the block, waiting for tickets at $2.50 apiece. Attendance would be good, a capacity crowd, and most of the local luminaries were coming. LSD pioneer Timothy Leary arrived and was given a special seat on stage. He was more or less the inventor of LSD. If not exactly the inventor, he was definitely the one who popularized it. He had been a professor at Harvard University. You know, to be a professor in any university means you've got to be taken very seriously. To be a professor at Harvard University It's right up there with Oxford and Cambridge. It is one of the top five universities in the world. And he was a very prominent professor there. But somehow he found out about LSD and he really got into it. And then he started popularizing it. So he was literally the chief priest of the hippie movement. He was the chief philosopher and the person who was explaining the different concepts of things like free love and, yeah, make love, not war, the peace movement, because he was a brilliant person. So, and he was highly, amongst the hippies at least, he was highly respected. By this time, he had been kicked out of Harvard for being too way out. But he was there. He's just such an extremely important person for all the young people who were coming and who were going to participate. So he was given a special seat on stage. Swami Kriyananda came, carrying a tambura. Not heard of him. A man wearing a top hat and a suit with a silk sash that said, San Francisco, arrived, claiming to be the mayor. Okay. At the door, Mukunda stopped a respectably dressed young man who didn't have a ticket. But then someone tapped Mukunda on the shoulder. Let him in. It's all right. He's Owsley. Owsley is another one right up there with Timothy Leary. He was the one who actually physically, chemically invented LSD. Yeah. Mukunda apologized and submitted, allowing Augustus Owsley Stanley II, folk hero and famous synthesizer of LSD, to enter without a ticket. So yeah, he was a scientist. Chemistry fellow, yeah, and he was the one who made LSD possible for everyone. So he's just another super important person in the hippie community. Almost everyone who came wore bright or unusual costumes, tribal robes, Mexican ponchos, Indian quarters, God's eyes feathers and beads. Some hippies brought their own flutes, lutes, gourds, drums, rattles, horns, and guitars. The Hell's Angels, dirty haired, wearing jeans, boots and denim jackets, and accompanied by their women, made their entrance, carrying chains, smoking cigarettes, and displaying their regalia of German helmets, means Nazi helmets, emblazoned emblems, and so on, everything but their motorcycle, which they had parked outside. They were also very prominent in the hippie world. And the devotees, particularly Shamsundar Prabhu, who was the leader of the devotees in San Francisco, and who was himself fairly prominent in the hippie community, Shamsunda was very close to the leader of the Hell's Angels. What was his name? You remember his name? The leader of the Hell's Angels. Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but Shamsunda was really friendly with him, and that person, young man, I can't remember his name. He really appreciated Hare Krishna. And when they brought Hell's Angels to England, that fellow came with some of his associates and stayed with the devotees. Would you believe? The Hell's Angels. They're just in a different space. Okay. The devotees began a warm-up kirtan on stage, dancing the way Swamiji had shown them. Incense poured from the stage and from the corners of the large ballroom. And although most in the audience were high on drugs, the atmosphere was calm. They had come seeking a spiritual experience. As the chanting began very melodiously, some of the musicians took part by playing their instruments. The light show began. Strobe lights flashed. Colored balls bounced back and forth to the beat of the music. Large blobs of pulsing color splurted across the floor, walls, and ceiling. I don't know if you've ever seen one of the hippie light shows. Have any of you been in a hippie program like? Oh, I've been in them. And, it's just bizarre, like most things to do with the hippies. The leader of the the one who formed the Hell's Angels, Sunny Baja. Sunny Baja was a close friend of Shamsunda's. the founder, more or less, of the Hell's Angels. All right, anyway. So a little after 8 o'clock, Moby Grape took the stage. Did you ever hear of Moby Grape? You didn't hear him? Oh, I knew Moby Grape. I mean, not personally, but they were big time. Right up there with Jefferson Airplane. Right up there. So they took the stage with heavy electric guitars, electric bass, and two drummers. They launched into their first number. The large speakers shook the ballroom with their vibrations, and a roar of approval rose from the audience. Around 9:30, Prabhupada left his Frederick Street apartment and got into the back seat of Harvey's Cadillac. Means the Moby Grape and whoever else, you know, I mean, they were all pretty intense people with pretty intense music. They had been playing for almost, say, an hour and a half, plus or minus. Sure, yeah. Okay. So Prabhupada was dressed in his usual saffron robes, and around his neck he wore a garland of gardenias, whose sweet aroma filled the car. On the way to the Avalon, that's the name of the hall, yeah, he talked about the need to open more centers. At 10 o'clock, Prabhupada walked up the stairs of the Avalon, followed by Kirtanananda and Ranchor. As he entered the ballroom, devotees blew conch shells. Someone began a drum roll, and the crowd parted down the center, all the way from the entrance to the stage, opening a path for Prabhupada to walk. With his head held high, Prabhupada seemed to float by as he walked through the strange milieu, making his way across the ballroom floor to the stage. Suddenly, the light show changed. Pictures of Krishna and his pastimes flashed onto the wall. Krishna and Arjuna riding together on Arjuna's chariot. Krishna eating butter. Krishna subduing the whirlwind demon. Krishna playing the flute. As Prabhupada walked through the crowd, everyone stood, applauding and cheering. He climbed the stairs and seated himself softly on a waiting cushion. The crowd quieted. Because at that time, Hare Krishna was sort of, you know, but somewhere between pretty cool and super cool. Yeah, it was well up there. You know, as time went on and people understood that if you're a Hare Krishna, you cannot do certain things, particularly take intoxication and engage in illicit sex life, the sort of the coolness subsided to, at least to, you know, some degree. But even so, Hare Krishna, during the hippie period, it remained cool and respected, even though many people found it was a bit too strict for them. But the chanting and the prasada, oh, they didn't worry about the regulative principles for those things. They would come and take part. So the crowd quieted. Looking over at Allen Ginsberg, Prabhupada said, "You can speak something about the mantra." So now this Allen Ginsberg, he is another just extremely famous person amongst the hippies. Actually, Allen Ginsberg comes from before the hippies. He comes from the period in American sort of youth social history called the Beatnik period, which is before the hippies, like the early 60s and the 50s. But they were like hippies. They were just rejecting society, taking drugs, and all that. So Allen Ginsberg was a somewhat older, little bit older person. And he was a poet, a very famous poet, just in America, not only amongst the young people by any means. He was a very prominent person in the literary world in America. Sri Sri Radha Radna Sri Giri Govardhan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. And he had been to India, and I'm sure we've read in the previous chapters how he befriended Srila Prabhupada, and he really appreciated Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would have him, well, he would come to some programs and events, and Prabhupada would have him sing Hare Krishna, because he liked singing Hare Krishna. And he had his own harmonium. And he would play his own harmonium and sing Hare Krishna. And people, particularly the younger people, but so many people would be impressed that if Allen Ginsberg is into it, it must be cool. It really must be. He passed away some years ago. And he was another one who struggled with the regulative principles. So Alan began to tell of his understanding and experience with the Hare Krishna mantra. He told how Swamiji had opened a storefront on 2nd Avenue and had chanted Hare Krishna in Tompkins Square Park. And he invited everyone to the Frederick Street Temple. I especially recommend the early morning kirtans, he said, for those who, coming down from LSD, want to stabilize their consciousness on re-entry. This is classic hippie. Classic. Because LSD, if you take LSD, the effects last for hours. Like the whole night, if you take it in early in the evening, it lasts for, you know, at least several hours, and the effects are still there, maybe for a total of 10 or 12 hours or something. So, it's extremely powerful and disorienting. So his good advice from a sage, one of the hippie sages, those who coming down from LSD want to stabilize their consciousness on re-entry. Prabhupada spoke, giving a brief history of the mantra. Then he looked over at Alan again. You may chant. Alan began playing his harmonium and chanting into the microphone, singing the tune he had brought from India. Gradually, more and more people in the audience caught on and began chanting. As the kirtan continued and the audience got increasingly enthusiastic, musicians from the various bands came on stage to join in. Ranchor, a fear drummer, began playing Moby Grape's drums. Some of the bass and other guitar players joined in as the devotees and a large group of hippies mounted the stage. The multicolored oil slicks pulsed. That's the light show. And the balls bounced back and forth to the beat of the mantra, now projected onto the wall. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As the chanting spread throughout the hall, some of the hippies got to their feet, held hands, and danced. Allen Ginsberg, we sang Hare Krishna all night. It was absolutely great. An open thing. It was the height of the Haight Ashbury spiritual enthusiasm. It was the first time that there had been a music scene in San Francisco where everybody could be part of it and participate. Everybody could sing and dance rather than listen to other people sing and dance. Because that's what they'd normally do. in these concerts, they just sit there. And, you know, like Moby Grape was mentioned, that one of the most prominent groups at the time, they would play all this heavy drug music, all about taking drugs and what happens to you and how it feels and all that. And everyone who had taken drugs would just sit there. But now everyone's up, or gradually more and more are getting up and chanting, and I think that actually everyone got into it pretty much. Janaki. People didn't know what they were chanting for. But to see that many people chanting, even though most of them were intoxicated, made Swamiji very happy. He loved to see the people chanting. Hayagriva, standing in front of the bands, I could hardly hear. But above all, I could make out the chanting of Hare Krishna, building steadily. On the wall behind, a slide projected a huge picture of Krishna in a golden helmet with a peacock feather, a flute in his hand. Then Srila Prabhupada stood up, lifted his arms, and began to dance. He gestured for everyone to join him, and those who were still seated stood up and began dancing and chanting and swaying back and forth, following Prabhupada's gentle dance. Roger Siegel, I think he became Gurudas. The ballroom appeared as if it was a human field of wheat blowing in the wind. It produced a calm feeling in contrast to the Avalon ballroom atmosphere of gyrating energy. The chanting of Hare Krishna continued for over an hour. And finally, everyone was jumping and yelling, even crying and shouting. Someone placed a microphone before Srila Prabhupada, and his voice resounded strongly over the powerful sound system. The tempo quickened. Srila Prabhupada was perspiring profusely. Kirtanananda insisted that the kirtan stop. Swamiji was too old for this, he said. It might be harmful. But the chanting continued faster and faster until the words of the mantra finally became indistinguishable amidst the amplified music and the chorus of thousands of voices. Then suddenly it ended, and all that could be heard was the loud hum of the amplifiers and Srila Prabhupada's voice ringing out, offering obeisances to his spiritual master. Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravrajakacharya Asmatar Sadashishimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Srila Prabhupada made his way off stage, through the heavy smoke and crowds, and down the front stairs, with Kirtanananda and Ranchor close behind him. Alan announced the next rock group. As Swamiji left the ballroom, and the appreciative crowd behind, He commented, this is no place for a brahmachari. Yes. The next morning, the temple was crowded with young people who had seen Swamiji at the Avalon. Most of them had stayed up all night. Srila Prabhupada, having followed his usual morning schedule, came down at 7, held kirtan, and delivered the morning lecture. Later that morning, while riding to the beach with Kirtanananda and Hayagriva, Swamiji asked how many people had attended last night's kirtan. When they told him, he asked how much money they had made, and they said they weren't sure, but it was approximately $1,500. Half audibly, he chanted in the back seat of the car, looking out the window as quiet and unassuming as a child, with no indication that the night before he had been cheered and applauded by thousands of hippies who had stood back and made a grand aisle for him to walk in triumph across the strobe-lit floor amid the thunder of the electric basses and pounding drums of the Avalon Ballroom. For all the fanfare of the night before, he remained untouched, the same as ever in personal demeanor. He was aloof, innocent, and humble, while at the same time appearing very grave and ancient. As Kirtanananda and Hayagriva were aware, Swamiji was not of this world. They knew that he, unlike them, was always thinking of Krishna. They walked with him along the boardwalk near the ocean with its cool breezes and cresting waves. Kirtanananda spread the chadar over Prabhupada's shoulders. In Bengali, there is one nice verse, Prabhupada remarked, breaking his silence. I remember. Oh, what? This is now the verse. Oh, okay. So this is now the verse. I remember. Oh, what is that voice across the sea calling, calling? Come here, come here. Speaking little, Prabhupada walked the boardwalk with his two friends, frequently looking out at the sea and sky. As he walked, he softly sang a mantra that Kirtanananda and Hayagriva had never heard before. Govinda Jaya Jaya, Gopala Jaya Jaya, Radha Ramana Hari, Govinda Jaya Jaya. He sang slowly in a deep voice as they walked along the boardwalk. He looked out at the Pacific Ocean. Because it is great, it is tranquil. Sure, that's good, isn't it? Because it is great, it is tranquil. The ocean seems to be eternal, Hayagriva venture. No, Prabhupada replied. Nothing in the material world is eternal. So now the scene shifts, but we'll carry on for a few minutes. And then actually, when we finish in 5 minutes or so, we're going to have a very small initiation ceremony for one devotee. So bear with us. All right. So in New York, since there were so few women present at the temple, people had inquired whether it was possible for a woman to join the Krishna consciousness movement. But in San Francisco, that question never arose. Most of the men who came to learn from Swamiji came with their girlfriends. To Prabhupada, these boys and girls, eager for chanting and hearing about Krishna, were like sparks of faith to be fanned into steady, blazing fires of devotional life. There was no question of his asking the newcomers to give up their girlfriends or boyfriends. And yet he was uncompromisingly preached no illicit sex. The dilemma, however, seemed to have an obvious solution. Marry the couples in Krishna consciousness. which was not a popular idea amongst the hippies. It was like, what? Mary? In fact, there was a not so famous song, but there was a song by John Mayall, who was British and one of the leading musicians of the hippie time, and even before the hippie time a bit. There was a song, Marriage Madness, and it was all about why he felt, you know, well, obviously, you should not get married. Not just you don't have to, but you actually should not. Okay. Because traditionally a sannyasi would never arrange or perform marriages, by Indian standards, someone might criticize Prabhupada for allowing any mingling, any in italics, any mingling of the sexes. But Prabhupada gave priority to spreading Krishna consciousness. What Indian, however critical, had ever tried to transplant the essence of India's spiritual culture into the Western culture? Prabhupada saw that to change the American social system and completely separate the men from the women would not be possible. But to compromise his standard of no illicit sex was also not possible. Therefore, Krishna conscious married life, the Grihastha ashram, would be the best arrangement for many of his new aspiring disciples. In Krishna consciousness, husband and wife could live together and help one another in spiritual progress. It was an authorized arrangement for allowing a man and a woman to associate. If, as spiritual master, he found it necessary to perform marriages himself, he would do it. But first, these young couples would have to become attracted to Krishna consciousness. Okay, so the next section is long. So if it's all right with you, we will conclude here and we will have our little initiation ceremony. And this morning, Bhakta Keshav Prabhu from Alberton, Johannesburg, is receiving first initiation and the cameras. So I think you come over this side that appears. Yeah. No. You have to offer full dandelion. Audibly. So Bhakta Keshav Prabhu, he is from a devotee family. His parents are initiated devotees and somewhat prominent in ISKCON in Joburg. The father's a member of the committee in the Santon Temple, the sort of management committee. And there's a sister, she's also a devotee, so yeah, very nice devotee family. Okay, so we're changing the neck beads. Yeah. And Keshav is just finishing university. Another 6 months to go. And he'll have some sort of, I don't know, accounting and IT degree. Yeah. But he's here for a month, and he's really helping. it's really good, actually. Thank you for coming and helping. Can you just check the focus on this? Well, on both, I guess. Okay. And on this one, just make sure it's right. Right, so, Keshav Prabhu, please tell us, what are the four regulative principles you're vowing today to follow for the rest of your life, at least?
No meat eating, including fish and eggs, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication, including onion and garlic.
And tea and coffee.
Okay,
good. That's nice. And, you know, there's actually a GBC resolution that devotees, when they receive first initiation, they're meant to vow to never leave Prabhupada's ISKCON. You vow to
never leave Prabhupada's ISKCON.
Good on you. Thank you. All right. And how many rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will you chant?
A minimum of 16 rounds.
Okay, thank you. Very good. So, we discussed the subject of what name might be, you know, nice. And he's already got this nice name, Keshava. Having thought about it, we'll change it a little bit, but not too much. From today on, your name will be Keshava Madhava Das. Keshava Madhava Prabhu Ke. Hare Krishna. And thank you all for giving your blessing. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.